Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 2nd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Mayer. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Ed Ossett is with us from the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. He's an agricultural economist there. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss to begin with. Bill Mayer, I think I'll start with you, please.
Well, I think we should probably discuss the upcoming supply-demand report next week and what our thoughts might be on that, and in particular the wheat situation globally and where are we at and what's changed here over the last few weeks from the standpoint of the global wheat situation.
Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
I think that's pretty much the main story is how big is USA going to go? Was FC Stone in the ballpark, or are they too low, too high based upon crop rating levels? And what kind of impact we will have on that supply-demand balance sheet, especially if USDA doesn't increase demand any.
And Ed Ossett.
Boy, no one wants to talk about trade or PASA. I suppose the difficult part here, Todd, is we're not sure what to talk about there until something is settled. Crop conditions are certainly a big issue, and I heard wheat mentioned, and I'm glad it was, because I'm hoping that Bill or Dan can tell me why the market popped 25 to 30 cents today before settling back.
All right. Well, let's begin not there, Ed, but I want to talk about with you about corn. You have a rule of thumb, and I believe it goes something like, thou shalt not carry old crop corn past July. Can you tell me about that rule this year?
Yes, it is, thou shalt not, we call it the 11th commandment of grain marketing. Thou shalt not carry grain in the bin, unpriced grain in the bin, beyond July 1. And it has everything to do with two powerful seasonal patterns. One is the tendency for corn and soybean new crop futures to go lower from spring into fall. It's not a certainty, but it's a strong tendency. And of course, I don't need to bring your listeners back through what happened over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Even given our rally of the last week, we're still way down from our spring highs. The other big trend is the tendency for basis to weaken from sometime in the summer into the harvest. So your cash price on that grain held in the bin is made up of the futures and the basis, and both of them have a tendency to go lower. So my deal is empty those bins, sell the grain. If you need upside potential, grab a couple of cheap calls.
Now, I know that all the Minneapolis and Minnesota farmers have followed suit with you, and they've done their due diligence, so we don't need to worry about them, but the rest of the Corn Belt has not, and I know Dan Zwicker follows the charts pretty well. Dan, do you see in the end of the month, July, numbers on the charts, and I think there was a hook up or a reversal up in the corn, something that might give old crop corn futures some possibilities if they didn't do what Ed suggested, which was to go ahead and make those sales?
Well, Ed's rule not to hold corn or beans past July 1st is dead on when you look at the seasonalities, because the month of July, I don't have it right at in front of me, but I'd say about 8 out of 10 years you close lower for the month of July. Two of those years out of 10 you close higher. This year seems to be one of those years, because we did close corn higher for the month of July. We closed soybeans higher after taking out the June lows, so we did have what we call hook reversals on a monthly chart. Wheat actually had an outside up on wheat. Now, it's not as uncommon for wheat to close higher during July, but it is really counter-seasonal to see corn and soybeans close higher in the month of July. And I don't know necessarily what it says, but I did have someone that follows me on Twitter by the name of Bob Hobbs, and he said in the past 49 years, we had higher closes 17 times. And in of those 17 times, 14 of them had bullish outcomes. So if you look at that angle of the market, and I know it has nothing to do with fundamentals, all it basically says is the fundamentals are going to come our way, I guess. But this it does say statistically we have a reasonable shot at maybe a counter-seasonal climb as we go on into harvest. And I know I'm an old-timer. Years ago, we used to have election year rallies. That hasn't been much of the case recent modern time, but I just wonder if we're going back into the old times that we did have election year rallies. And of course, with trade at the front burner, you know, if Trump would pull a rabbit out of the hat here sometime here before harvest or during harvest, I think we would have a pretty good counter-seasonal election year type rally.
Does anybody think he'll be able to do that, whether it's with Mexico or China? I have my doubts about the second one, but maybe, Bill Mayer, Mexico might be closer, do you suppose?
Yeah, from what I understand or what I read and hear, and certainly if I knew that, I'd be having the inside track, but I think that's obvious that we're seeing on the markets is a change day to day, which we saw explicitly here the last 2 days. Thoughts, real positive thoughts of the fact that China and U.S. may get back together on Tuesday and yesterday closing lower because of the talk about raising tariffs up to from 10% to 25%. But from what I understand, I think the NAFTA situation is closer than the China situation as far as getting resolved, and Mexico is kind of, it sounds to me like their terms are pretty much agreed upon. It's Canada that's kind of holding up the situation now, and I think mainly on the dairy side of it is the way I understand it.
Ed Usett, you mentioned trade. What are your thoughts here? And did you happen to read the Farm Doc Daily article written by Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas and Carl Zuloff and others? Carl, of course, is from the University of Ohio at Columbus, though he's retired. And did you get a chance to take a look at that? And have you thought about what all of this trade means?
Well, I've thought about it, and the only thing I can really conclude is that we just don't know. I mean, we're kind of in no man's land here. We don't have any sort of a recent or even, I go back 20, 30, 40 years in this industry, and I can't think of a trade war that like this. I can't think of a similar situation. I have no reason to believe that it will be over quickly. We're told it'll be over quickly, but I don't know if it will be over quickly. And so I'm really struggling with that. And, you know, the fundamentals of this market, corn, soybeans, and wheat, are not all that bad. In fact, they're almost positive, I would say. We're bringing stocks down in all three markets worldwide. This should be a positive thing, but it's this trade issue as much as anything that's laying on this market.
We'll have to wait and see and hear from the president and from other nations to decide what they want to do about trade. I would urge folks to visit the Farm Doc Daily website and check out an article that was written, I think, on Wednesday of this particular week, talking about how trade has changed or what this trade dispute might be about in a different sort of function, looking at the last 30 or 40 years, and what it might...
Yeah, I think,
well, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a little bigger issue here in play, but I don't know. I suppose you could call it a trade war. We've been in a trade war, but the U.S. hasn't been pushing back is the problem. The last three presidents that we've had, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, none of them pushed back on trade. They let the EU continue with their barriers, their tariffs. They continued with Canada, letting them have theirs. And then they basically let China just sell anything into the United States and let China have their barriers. And Trump is the one politician that decided to shake things up. And the war has been going on for 30 years. It's just that Trump has decided to push back because as a country, I don't think we can afford to have $750 billion deficits to other countries without losing jobs and we're exporting our wealth. So I think Trump's got the winning hand because this is much different than the 30s. The 30s, when we had a trade war, we were the ones that had the surpluses. This time, we're the ones that has the deficits. So I think and Trump doesn't look at it as a lens through a Republican or a Democrat or election. He looks at it as a problem that needs to be fixed. And I think that is what's going to be different about this thing because Trump was sent to Washington to mix up K Street, and he's definitely mixed up K Street. He's definitely mixed up the world order of trade. And I think, you know, it's a longer term issue, but I think it also indicates that maybe U.S. agriculture became too dependent on one customer. And we're seeing the consequences of that. And that, unfortunately, that customer is not necessarily a friend in the eyes of the world market. I would call China somewhat of an enemy too. So it's got some consequences anyway.
Yeah. So let me finish up on the Farm Doc Daily, and I'll let you add because I think Dan thought I may have been going somewhere else with this article, but this is an August 1 article entitled "U.S. Share of World Economic Growth: Implications for U.S. Trade Policy," and I'll just read one sentence from it. The proposed answer, and they talk about why is the United States involved in this at this point, and the proposed answer. This is verbatim as a quote, "The proposed answer is the rapid decline in U.S. share of world economic growth since the turn of the millennium." And so the answer, I think, Dan, that the Ag Economist were coming to, at least off the Farm Doc Daily website, says, look, the United States does not wield the power it did in the 80s and the 90s and even the early 2000s, and some of that is based off of GDP growth. Bill Mayer, now you can go.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we have gotten some vision of how this is going to affect things, and I certainly agree that there's going to be an economic effect, but if we just look at the soybeans, I mean, what happened is China quit buying beans from us and started buying everything from Brazil, as we saw the soybean price. This is a global market, and we had the Brazilian price of beans per ton about $80 per ton higher than the U.S. The U.S. was discounted to the Brazilian bean price by $80 per ton, all in the basis, all in the cash basis. And obviously, if anybody in the world was going to buy beans from anywhere, it wouldn't have been from Brazil other than China. It would have been from the United States with that kind of a discount, assuming, you know, equal no tariff situation with the other country. So I think that we saw, I guess what I'm saying simply is that the market works, and as you see that situation develop, the market equalized the prices, basically, to take care of the situation. And I think we do have to remember this is a global market, and we may be the exporter of last resort, but I don't think that means that we do not export any beans.
Ed, I said any follow-up?
Well, I guess I just don't feel we have a major trade problem to deal with. I know there are issues out there, intellectual property and so on. Trade deficits all by themselves don't bother me that much. That's one way of looking at trade. As I was telling someone the other day, I have a hell of a trade deficit with my plumber. I pay the guy twice a year to come unplug, fix a faucet, and replace a broken pipe, and the son of a gun never buys anything from me. That's the nature of trade. So I'm not, I personally am not that hung up on the trade deficits, and we've thrown ourselves into no man's land here.
Okay, let's talk more about the fundamentals of grain and come back to where we are this week. I'll come back to you, Bill Mayer, because you talked about coming to some kind of equilibrium. But we're at a much lower price in the United States, at least. Do you think that the Chinese will be in the marketplace for soybeans, or do they have the capacity to avoid us for some time?
I think for some time, and I think they'll delay, I mean, assuming no changes or no agreements, I think they'll delay their coming to us as long as they can. And I think if, since the timing of our harvest, if they can delay it, you know, through October, I think that can have a major effect on prices here in the United States, basis-wise as well as cash-wise or futures-wise. I think that's probably what their plan is, but I don't know that. But I do think that sometime during October, November, December, they're going to, and probably into January, they're going to have to buy beans from the United States. They pretty much bought the beans that they can buy from South America at this point, you know, as far as purchasing ahead. So October, November, December, they don't have a lot of coverage on from the way I understand it, but you never know that for sure. So I think that's the situation. I had also brought up earlier in the when you asked about the questions, the wheat situation. I think that's a major factor here as we look at what's been going on fundamentally in the world. We basically, the latest thing was from the Ukraine ag minister today saying they may have to limit milling wheat exports at some point down the road. We have the EU that's probably got a 20% cut in the wheat crop, and sounds like it, I mean, it feels like it may be closer to 25. We have the Russian, the FSU crop that's being hurt by drought over there. And so we have three major exporters that have got major production problems here in the wheat. And I think that's been one of the driving forces here as we've seen our prices come back. I think it's kind of slipped by some of the marketplace due to the fact that everybody was so focused on the trade situation and the tariffs, that how bad some of these situations are at. And I didn't mention Australia, but Australia would be the third one that we're looking at.
And certainly, Ed, this would be something you had been watching, I would think, especially for your wheat producers, spring wheat producers, and Durham in the influence area, the Dakotas, and Minnesota for you. How does this play out for them after and during the harvest? Some of the harvest is beginning for your wheat crop.
Well, we just finished up the spring wheat tour last week, and it's a heck of a lot better than it was a year ago. As of course, much of North Dakota was in the midst of a bad drought, so we're doing better than that, but not nearly as good as they thought. And I have to agree with the comments on wheat. This wheat market is turning. It is long overdue. First time, and this is first significant change in the fundamentals towards the bullish side in 5 years. And wheat can lead. A strong wheat market can bode well for corn and soybean.
Dan, wheat finished the month of July with an outside up. How bullish might that be?
Well, it's more bullish than with the way corn and soybeans. I mean, that's the way I'd rank, and wheat closed out the strongest, corn second, and wheat and beans the weakest. Beans waited to the last day to kind of rally to put on a nice finish for the close of July. But, yeah, you got two followers. I mean, it's either wheat or leaders. Wheat's a leader and or oilseed's a leader. Corn kind of is in the middle. Corn, the only time corn's kind of been a leader is probably we experienced it, I guess, in the double O's with the Renewable Fuels Act and the big expansion of domestic demand for ethanol. Corn kind of was the leader, and beans and wheat kind of watched what corn was doing. But going back to the old-fashioned days, those are the two leaders. Wheat is the leader. And soybeans are a leader, oil seeds, and corn's kind of in the middle, and it kind of goes whichever which way. So, I mean, basically what the market is telling farmers, I guess, throughout the world is we need to plant more wheat acres. So then when you plant more wheat acres, that means you may have less corn acres, less barley acres, less feed grain acres, less oil seed acres, and then that in turn helps corn and soybeans move higher if we could get wheat to really go. Just technically here, I say short term wise, we could start running into a little resistance here about $6 to $6.10, then maybe have some kind of setback. But if it's for real, we could take a run all the way on up to 660 on the September contract. That seems to be a little stretch, but the way she moved today, it wouldn't take us too long to get there.
I want to take up the FC Stone survey as well. You mentioned this during our Thursday closing market report, Dan. Their yields that are 178.1 nationwide for corn at 51.5 for soybeans, both of those well above what USDA has currently. Do you think those numbers are too big for the crop production report due out Friday of next week on the 10th of August?
If the August report is plant population multiplied by average ear weight, probably not. And that same way with the soybeans. I mean, if plant population is the key factor in the August crop report, we'll probably get a big report. They don't start calculating, I don't think, an ear weight, and pod counts really don't start coming into play until you get into the September reports. So I think that's what the market is probably working. That's why the market really didn't have much of an, that's why the market didn't react very negative to it. We've been here with these crop rating levels, if they mean anything. One would say that we got a better crop than last year. I'm not convinced of that, but I'm not sure we'll really know till the combines start rolling. But at least FC Stone has opened the door for USDA to go that high if they want to go that high. I'm not sure when Informa Economics is coming out, but I'm sure they'll be out shortly. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers they come up with.
Bill, your thoughts on those crop production numbers as they come out and what the trade is currently looking at?
Well, I think we definitely have a very good crop across the Midwest. And we had our conference call again today. We did start to see some areas developed and some dryness and some, maybe some setback. But we have a very good crop out here. I think the issue really is that we had a record crop last year, and how do you compare, one record crop to the other? I think sitting here in Champaign, I'm not sure how we could have asked for anything better. If you would have written a prescription on how to raise corn, I think it would have looked pretty much like our summer here this year. So we can't look too much out the back door. There are some areas in Missouri and Michigan, southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, some of those areas that have had some problems weather-wise. But I guess I think Stone's numbers look pretty, when I expect what the USDA may come with, I think the corn number's probably right in there where I'd be looking, and the bean number, of course, you don't really know at this point. I probably wouldn't think it'd be quite that high this early.
The statewide averages, just so that you have them, from the FC Stone numbers, Illinois at 204 for corn, 60 for yield, or for soybeans. Iowa at 196, 59 for corn, or for soybeans. And Nebraska then at, 193 and 64. Minnesota is the number four producer of corn at 192 and 50. And Kansas, now the number five for corn at 140 bushels. So they have the acres, but not the yield for corn, and 36 on their soybeans. And one other, let's see, do we have Missouri? Just because Missouri's been so very, very dry, their corn yield down at 130, their soybean yield at 44. That, of course, probably coming mostly out of the Boot Hills. So I'm wondering, given these numbers at us, at what you're looking for and thinking about as it might relate to the changes that could come in the supply and demand tables for old and or new crop in this August 10 report.
Well, I'm not anticipating a big surprise. I think I have a very Minnesota perspective. That's what I try to keep track of. And Minnesota looks very good, but they also had too much rain early, and not just some small drowned-out areas, some larger drowned-out areas in the southwest and the southern part of the state. So we look good. I'm not going to talk the Minnesota crop down. I was very interested to hear your number on Minnesota, 192 bushel the acre. That would be our third largest crop behind the last 2 years. And you know what? I can't argue with that right now. I can't argue with it.
So these are some big numbers. They're up against trade that has not been settled. Although on the global front, it appears there is some support for the marketplace, Ed, as you mentioned early on. How do they weigh out going into the fall and cash bids?
Well, I'm trying to think ahead to harvest. I'm assuming we will slide into harvest at numbers similar to what we have now or a little bit lower. Again, the trade wild card is out there that could be you know, if something is resolved quickly, that could be very friendly, or just the opposite, too. But assuming we go into harvest at current levels, I'm gonna swallow hard, put that grain in the bin, and hope we get something worked out, because the worldwide situation is not that is not as overly bearish as it has been at times over the last 4 or 5 years, and there is an opportunity for a regular seasonal rise through the crop year, and maybe even better than regular rise.
Hey, Bill, how do you feel like a producer should deal with this? Ed wants to put it in the bin. Are you of that same opinion?
Well, I think if you have the bin space on the farm to put them in, I think you definitely want to do that. I think you, as we talked about last year, I think we're in the same situation. We got a pretty good carry in the market. I think you keep your eyes on those futures out there, and I think Ed would probably agree with that after, you know, hearing him speak several times over the years. You look out there ahead to get some futures prices locked in at some point, you know, in the March, May, July, whenever you think that you may want to move that corn. I don't think you wait till you get to those time frames necessarily to sell the corn, but I can make the case for the demand side of the market on the corn, I think, is the issue. Even in the United States here, I think with a 178 bushel crop, I think you can fairly easily come up with a billion five carry out, something like that. Not as near as burdensome as maybe what we've been looking at the last few years. So I think there's potential from a price standpoint. The first step from a marketing standpoint is dealing with the crop that you got to take into town and put into commercial storage or sell. And I've been trying to encourage people in some areas. We still have, as the price dropped on corn, the elevators got a little bit pretty aggressive on bases in the fall slot for a period. They're trying to get some stuff on the books. I think they see this big crop coming at them. So I've been looking at doing some basis contracts for fall as we've risen here in prices. I don't mind making some sales. I think that if you thought that you had 35% of your crop sold, for example, and now you see that your crop's going to be a lot larger than what you anticipated, I think that you use this rally that we've had to get yourself back up to that 35% level. In reality, what yield you're realistically looking at now. So those are some of the things I guess I have been talking to producers about from the basis contract standpoint for fall. At least that gives you something to deliver on, and you don't have to be concerned with commercial storage, and you may want to end up pricing that prior to harvest time. But my anticipation would be that we're going to have an early pre-harvest low and then probably work our way up as we move through harvest.
Dan, over the years, you have said from time to time, depending on the year, that farmers fall in love with their bins and they like to fill them, but that's not necessarily what they should do. Which should they do this year?
At this point, I would fill their bins, but I also, you got to manage money. A lot of cash flow needs come due on December 1st. So, the way the month of July has closed out and looking at the statistics, I guess I'm inclined to want to be on the positive side. But I look at if FC Stone's numbers are right, USDA is going to have to put, I don't see how they find demand for another 350 to 400 million bushels of corn and another 170 million bushels of beans compared to their current numbers. So we're going to have to, I see carry out going up, and I guess I don't see that as necessarily as a bullish factor when you look at supply demand tables.
And yet you're willing to wait it out, and I suppose for you that's waiting for the president to finalize trade deals.
Trump seems to be kind of lucky, so I guess I'm going to stick with Trump for a while. He seems to he seems to do a pretty good job, so I'm going to stick it out. But I think just looking at the yields, we got a lot of problems with supply. I know everybody's bullish on demand, but I'd be surprised if USDA can eat up the supply increase in their balance sheet on the demand table.
Let's get a final word from each of you on this now. I think, Bill Mayer, I'll start with you.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just repeat. I think you've got to look forward, especially if you are filling the bins. For example, we close the 404 tonight on July corn of next year. So you're looking at close to that $4 mark in the May and July futures next year. December of next year, by the way, is over for it at 408. So I think you should have some targets in mind out there if you are putting the corn in the bin on what your goal is to try to get with a typical basis in the spring off those kind of numbers, what's your cash price that you're wanting to offer in out there.
Dan Zwicker, your final word for the day?
Just stay patient and see and hope that we can get through the August crop report without any damage being done to the technical side of the picture.
And Ed Ossett.
Your listeners have gotten some great thoughts out of your other visitors here, Bill and Dan. I just want to tell them that I'm going to be part of a program next week. Farm Journal Media is sponsoring Growing the Future, August 8th and 9th at the Hilton Indianapolis Hotel and Suites. I'll be speaking in the Victory Ballroom on August 8th.
Oh, thanks, Ed. I nearly forgot about that. You will be at the Growing the Future event in Indianapolis, Indiana next week. That's August the 8th and 9th, as you said, at the Hilton Indianapolis Hotel and Suites. This is sponsored by Farm Journal Medium. Those are the folks that have AgWeb and Ag Day Television. Also, Chip Flory's programming, if you happen to listen to that. AgriTalk, and then he's got an afternoon program as well. They have arranged for those of you that go and register and use this discount code to get into that event for free. The discount code is RADIO, all capital letters, R-A-D-I-O. That's RADIO. And you can use that discount code if you'd like to attend the Farm Journal Media event, the Growing the Future event next week. I'll put all of that up on our website at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Thanks for listening to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us again online at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Our panelists this week have included Ed Usset, agricultural economist from the University of Minnesota, Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.